Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Brandon.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
The Astros have proven to beat the big, bad New York Yankees.
And he hits the ball sharply down the line. That's a fair ball. Dubon on the move as Carpenter tries to dig it out of the corner. Here comes Dubon. He's going to score. RBI double for Corey Lee. Astros lead 2-0.
They still have never trailed in an inning in the series against the Yankees all season.
Broken bat towards short. Backhanded. Throw nowhere. Astros win. J.J. Manajevic puts the ball in play, and the Astros walk off the New York Yankees 3-2.
Yankees lose.
Jordan goes the other way. This ball's going to end up in the Crawford boxes. Welcome back, big man. Number 27 on the air, 1-0 Astros.
But it's not, the narrative's not going to change, Dan, until you beat them in the playoffs if that day comes.
Jordan hits one to deep left center field. Back goes Hicks. He's near the wall. It's off the wall. That'll be a two RBI double. The big man, a home run and a double just off the IL.
If we happen to come back here in October, we're going to show up. We're going to expect to win. We think we're really good. They're really good. Don't overstate this.
A little tapper towards third. Bregman to second for one. Pena the turn. Double play. An Astros sweep of a doubleheader.
Yankees lead.
Oh, man. I am an empire state of mind today, Blankers. I just got to tell you, if you can do it in the big city, you can do it anywhere. The city's so nice, you got to name it twice, the Big Apple.
And then you got to beat them twice, like you did yesterday, when you just completely took them to the woodshed yet again. I mean, when you look at the total destruction that the Astros, how they devastatingly just took it to the Yankees, and literally should have absolutely swept them in the season series for every single game, with the exception of the two Aaron Judge walk-offs. It has been pure domination.
I wonder what Passan Asterisk is thinking about that doubleheader loss yesterday.
He's grinding inside.
You know he is. Passan Asterisk, I'm sure, did not sleep well at night last night.
He does his Elmo impersonations.
I remember seeing that a little bit.
He's probably at home talking to Elmo about how distraught he is, but he has to fake it on the air.
Passan Asterisk does the Elmo impersonation. That's very on brand of him. How about that? The Astros sweeping the doubleheader against the New York Yankees. 3-2 in game one. Got a little hairy there, but the Astros, it all's well that ends well. And then game two, got a little bit of a sweat there in the ninth inning that you didn't think you were going to have. But win that one as well, 7-5. You mentioned it. Take the season series against the Yankees. They won five of those. The two that they lost, they should have won. And the Yankees didn't win that game until their final at bat. It does have some significance in terms of the regular season race. The Astros with the first win yesterday, clinching the in case they end in a tie, they clinched the tiebreaker for the number one seed in the American League if they finish tied at the end of the regular season. But a lot to talk about from that game yesterday. Where should we start? I don't even know where to start. There was 18 innings of baseball. There was lots of storylines. There were some questionable Dusty Baker decisions, according to some. One of the things that we talked about as well came into fruition with the whole bullpen and all of that. Oh. Both of your starters lasted just five innings, but Brandon Bielak saved the day. I don't even know where to begin.
Hey, yo, this is what I should begin with. Texans talk. Because you know what? Ain't nothing to see here. It's freaking July. I mean, you want fireworks? We'll talk to you in October. We still got the best record in baseball. There's nothing to talk about here. You guys are a-holes talking about this crap right now. You didn't do nothing that you wouldn't have to do again in October. There's nothing to talk about here. I got all my Yankee friends saying, that ain't nothing. You didn't do anything last night. It's just another one of the regular season games.
That's what Aaron Boone was saying. Aaron Boone said, look, the narrative's not going to change. We got to do it in the postseason. Don't overstate this. What was the guy's name? Robert or something? I don't even know what the dude's name was. Overstate this, Maury.
It's just the weakest take ever. Like, of course, I know you have to say it, but at least he did work in there that they're a good team. Because before, Aaron Judge and everybody else was kind of overlooking them yet again. Like, you know what? It happened for a couple games, but it doesn't alter who the best team is. Now, if the message wasn't sent clearly before to the two New York teams during those nine games, coming out of the All-Star break, knowing what they were facing with the Mariners after this doubleheader, knowing that a doubleheader right out of the All-Star break, day, night, tough on everybody, taxing coming for those coming back from the game itself, let alone everybody getting reestablished. Yordan Alvarez, who hadn't taken any live pitching in a game, just mashing. I mean, it's just, you couldn't ask for anything more if you're an Astros fan, and then having your two best pitchers set up for the Mariners series.
Yeah. Yordan homering in his first at bat back was pretty cool. The double as well in left center field. The dude's one of the best hitters in baseball. And I'm becoming even more like hesitating whenever I say one of the best hitters in baseball. You can tell me he's the best hitter in baseball, and I would say, yeah, he absolutely is. And then you throw in the secondary part of that, that Juan Soto's like 500 million, 15 years, the demand that's out there for Juan Soto. Yordan Alvarez is a better hitter right now than Juan Soto is, and you got him for just over $17 million per year. It's criminal. Like, somebody should throw James Click into prison for what he got.
Well, and give Yordan credit, because what's what we're seeing from Kyle Tucker and his agent, and they're playing it smart and safe, and they're going to stick it out, and they're going to wait it out, and they're going to look for more money. It takes two to tango. The fact that Yordan came in wanting to stay here, wanting the security right away, and getting it from the Astros, and mutually agreeing upon the deal that they did, is just a win-win for both sides. And when you look at that, Jeremy, I'm going to pile on to whatever you were saying, and the fact that he went opposite field with power.
Yep, twice.
I mean, talk about one thing to say he can hit for average, he can hit for power, and then opposite field power. That ball didn't just creep over the Crawford boxes. That ball was shellacked going the other way. So when you think about all those things and he is locked up to be your guy, you've got to feel outstanding in every single aspect of the game when you wake up this morning as an Astros fan.
Yeah, good to have him back. He looks healthy, which is good. You're obviously going to have the hand in the back of your mind, you know, really throughout the rest of the season, but does not look hurt. No. I think that is very, very obvious. Now, there were two things yesterday that happened during one of each game that Dusty Baker taking a little bit of heat over. I think we could, well, at least I'm not one to always defend Dusty, but I feel like both of these occasions you can make the case that Dusty did the right thing. First, in game one, after the Astros gave up the lead, and there was a little ground ball to the left side there that had some people a little bit upset as well. We'll get into that a little bit later. But you had Twitter folks crushing Dusty Baker for pinch-hitting Yordan Alvarez with runners at second and third, Mauricio Dubon coming to the plate. Obviously, they're going to walk Yordan Alvarez in that spot, which I think Dusty Baker knew. Who wouldn't know that? And then you have Chaz McCormick on deck. A lot of people are very critical of Dusty Baker in that spot, saying, well, Dubon's more of a contact guy. The intentional walk of Yordan Alvarez set up the double play. What'd you think of that decision by the Astros skipper, Dusty Baker?
I didn't mind it. I mean, he's looking for a big hit from a guy that we just got done giving accolade after accolade to, but also wanting to kind of get him acclimated to the game again because you knew you were going to play him in the second game. So I didn't mind
it. But you knew they weren't going to pitch to him.
That's true. But you know what? At that point, you keep the inning going. So, I mean, I understand why people want to scrutinize him for it over and over again, but I don't mind it. It's not that big of a deal.
We were watching the game in the bullpen when it happened, and as soon as they intentionally walked Yordan after he was announced the pinch hitter, I said, well, Dusty should have known that. But then I started to think about it and was like, Dusty obviously knew they were going to do that. Yeah, it sets up the double play, you know, of course, with one out, bases loaded. It sets up the force out at the plate. All of those things, I understand that. But it also forces the pitcher, one, to make sure he's in the zone because now a walk wins the game. Now a hit batter wins the game as well. And also, like, to me, even if you wait for Yordan to pinch hit him in the Chaz spot, okay, well, Dubon gets out, doesn't drive in the game-winning run, they're going to intentionally walk Yordan in that spot anyways. So you're splitting hairs here to me. So Dusty's decision, at least in my opinion, was basically Mauricio Dubon or Chaz McCormick. And McCormick was swinging a pretty good bat in game one yesterday. Then he homered, by the way, in the second game.
Saved your bacon in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. If it's me, and look, I understand that Chaz McCormick against righties, not good. Mauricio Dubon against righties, also not very good. The numbers are marginal. They're very marginal. I go with the hot hand. I actually agree that Dusty Baker did the right thing there. And this is coming from somebody who lines up at every opportunity to bang on Dusty Baker.
You'd obviously like him to come out with one out, the bases loaded, and know that all you need from your best hitter is a fly ball or something hit hard to the outfield. But that wasn't going to happen. You know that most teams are going to pitch him no matter what the scenario is, especially if there's a base open. They're going to give it to him. So you just have to pick your battles, like you said. Pick the matchup that you want or you think is most favorable, and neither one was really favorable.
No.
But at the end of the day, you know what? You got the end result, and the inning keeps going. If you had put one of those guys up there, the inning might not have kept going, and you might have been in a different, a more compromised situation. So, look, you can nitpick Dusty on that one all you want. I'm fine with it as well because I just like the fact that he got an at-bat. He got back to at least seeing major league pitching again. And Lord knows that's all it took because what he did in the second game, which I don't think anybody could have expected, and if you did, I think you were being way too hard on a guy that has been too good for you. And you could have actually taken it with a grain of salt and gone, you know what, he's got to get his feet wet again. He's got to get back in the box. It'll happen. It'll take a few games. The fact that he did what he did right out of the chute just tells you, look, don't nitpick anything that Dusty did with Yordan when it comes to getting him in games because you need him in the games because when he does, good things happen.
I think it's fair to nitpick Dusty. Like, we're going to talk about the decisions. We're going to have the opinions on the decisions. I just don't feel like this is one where Dusty went wrong, and this is coming from somebody who thinks that Dusty does a lot wrong when he's managing a game. The second one that Dusty got a lot of criticism over, and look, if this wasn't the Yankees and this was the Kansas City Royals, no one even pays attention and pays no mind to these two decisions, was the Brandon Belak decision to leave him in the ninth inning. He went three strong after Luis Garcia had not given up a run. I was ready to build a statue of Brandon Belak, put it next to Bagwell, put it next to Biggio out there outside of Minute Maid Park. Ran into some trouble in that ninth inning, gave up the three-run homer to Aaron Judge, which made it a two-run game. Then you bring in Rafael Montero for the second time in the same day. Gave up the hit, tying run, but then got the ground out. What'd you think of Belak for the ninth?
Look, I felt bad for him because he did you such a big favor, and the Yankees tried to do the same thing in utilizing your 27th man that you were able to add for the doubleheader and just try to get everything you can out of him so you can save your staff for the weekend because you know you were going to be playing a division rival in both teams' cases. But you got more than the Yankees did from their guy. You got everything you could have asked for from your guy, but the thing that concerned me was the pitch count. When you looked at it and said you could almost compare his numbers by the time the ninth inning was starting with that of the starting pitcher, I thought that he was already past empty.
Yeah.
So I understand that he was like, God, if I can get through this second game and never use one of my bullpen guys, that's a massive, massive win. But even if you burnt one of your other guys, even if you burnt Seth or you burnt Abreu for a little bit or the guy that they just called up again, so what? It's one inning. You got a five-run cushion. And instead, it was just a little deflating because you felt for Belak when he went to the dugout. Like, he was down on himself. You could see he was wearing it. Mm-hmm. And it was like, everybody should be patting him on the back going, bro, you did a ton of work for us today.
I think the fan base in general is very appreciative of Belak. They just wish he didn't go with the ninth. I was actually okay with it for most of the reasons that you stated. Like, he's not going to be on the big league team today. In fact, they sent him down after the game to the taxi squad. It was a five-run game. Even giving up the three-run homer, it was still a two-run game. And the Astros yesterday began a stretch of 19 games in 18 days. The worst thing you could do is put the bullpen in a bad spot. I thought it was worth the gamble to try to squeeze another inning out of Brandon Belak. It didn't work, but you still won the game because you had the five-run cushion. I agree with Dusty on both of those fronts, which might come to a surprise to everybody. 713-780-ESPN, did you agree with Dusty? Did you enjoy the Astros' victory yesterday? 713-780-3776. And also, sweeping the Yankees feels better than what? You let us know. Sweeping the Yankees feels better than what? 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Something like that. Now Bregman drives one deep to left field. Back to back jack. Alex Bregman follows Yordan Alvarez, and the Astros on top 2-0.
So nice. The Astros had to do it twice. Bregman in an Empire State of Mind. Back to back. Yordan Alvarez. You had a Yordong. You had a Breggy Dong. Good time had by all. It made far. Good turnout as well by the Astro fans. A day night doubleheader. In the middle of July.
Double ticket is
on
very,
a Thursday.
Very, very tough sell anyway, even if it is the Yankees. And I know that the Astros had to do that because they had to cash in, and they literally cash in because they raised the ticket prices for the big name teams that come in.
Mm-hmm.
But just to get the showing that they got and to get the people that one thing that I noticed right off the top, which was amazing to me, was how early everybody got there. Like they were already pre-gaming to make sure that they got their food out of the way. So they were in their seats for the first pitch of the first game. And then I know people that went to both games. I know people that went to one or the other. Dre went to both. The equipment manager for the Rockets, my boy Tony, is a huge Yankee fan. He was at the early game.
Oh, but, did you send Anthony a little bit? Did you ask him how he was feeling this morning?
We've spoken, yes. And
feel bad for Anthony.
Yeah, I talked to him about the rest of his peoples. They're not really worried about it. And if you want to talk about it, we can talk about it in the parking lot, right? but, yeah, he actually laughed. But he was, again, one of the people that said, you know what, let's just worry about that in October. Well, if we see you, so be it. But it was so enjoyable to see the way the fan base came together, the way the team came together. That was the biggest thing. I mean, you've got all these pieces that have been, you know, in and out of the lineup and the injuries and everything else. And obviously it started with Yordan. But the thing is, like you and I talked about, Jeremy, people are looking at the averages when these guys come to the plate on and watch on TV. And they're saying, well, Yuli's really not doing anything. He's not hitting 300 like he did last year. Bregman's not really doing anything because, you know, he's not going to. They dug such deep holes for themselves to the early points of the season to almost the midway point. You're not going to see either guy hit 300. What you have to look at is how did they do in June? How did they do so far in July? Even Maldonado, a guy who's leading all catchers in the month of July. But when you factor in the other months of the season that count, he's not going to be anywhere near respectability at hitting. But the fact that they all came together, everybody stepped up to do their part, and they're still, you know, waiting for other guys to get healthy, to play the best team in baseball record-wise and to do what they did, we were hoping to get one. The fact that they got both, just the momentum and the confidence heading to Seattle is amazing.
Yeah. You built the lead back up to 10 as well. So, like, that's something we talked about before the All-Star break. The Mariners have won 14 in a row. They're selling out all of these games. They're going to be chomping at the bit, ready to go, which they are. But the Astros building the lead back up to 10 as opposed to 9 where it was before you started play yesterday in the doubleheader gives you a little bit more cushion as well as you head up to Seattle. 713-780-ESPN. Sweeping the Yankees feels better than what? You let us know. 713-780-3776. Dr. Dre on twitch.tv/ESPN975. Sweeping the Yankees is more satisfying than popping a sheet of air bubbles.
There's a lot of people that really get a lot of satisfaction out of air bubbles, like my kids, but I guess that's why Dre likes it so much. But you know what? I'm not going to steal your thunder. I think everybody felt a whole lot more satisfaction and went to bed a little happier last night after watching that unfold. I mean, I think you had to get a little nervous about that ninth inning with Montero in the second game. But the fact that you were able to put head on pillow going, you know what? We spanked that ass all season long. And no matter where they finish and what they do the rest of the year being the Yankees, they can't escape from that. And the only way that they can rewrite any kind of history is to create new history in October, which, mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, in the postseason, isn't in their favor either, as we all know.
No, it's not. The Astros have had the history as of late. Todd on Twitch saying, sweeping the Yankees feels better than the first sip of coffee in the morning. Mm. That's a pretty good thing. I love the first sip of coffee in the morning is always very good. And I don't disagree with Todd. What does the sweep of the Yankees feel better than? 713-780-ESPN. The show on Twitch says sweeping the Yankees feels better than laying down on a brand new 1,500 thread count sheet.
That's pretty good.
It feels really good.
That's
or like
really
the sheets
good.
Right out of the dryer. That always feels really good too.
My dogs. And it's funny because Lisa actually...
They like the 1,500 thread count sheets?
No, it was the right out of the dryer part of your comment, not the sheet part of the comment. Lisa will take their dog blankets and wash them, and they know. And the minute they hear the dryer door open and she starts walking them out towards the couches, it is like a free-for-all of who gets that first chance to lay on the still warm dog blankets, and that is like their heaven. They just roll around in it, no matter if it's 100 degrees or not, and just think that's the greatest thing. So I think for humans, the high thread count sheets, right up there.
Yeah, I think that's a very good one. Sweeping the Yankees feels better than what? 713-780-ESPN. Also, a couple people on the HRMP listener line, Dallas Longhorn. I know y'all talked about worrying about Seattle more, which I agreed with. However, it feels oh so sweet to do what we did. I think, too, if you look at it from the AL West, right? Like, I mean, 9 games, you go into it against Seattle tonight, but you increase it to 10. The Mariners are red hot. They're chomping at the bit. We were talking about it last week. Like, really, all you have to do is avoid the sweep. The fact now that you've won both games against the Yankees, I think it adds to that. Like, now it makes it even more acceptable and okay. Like, if you take one of three in Seattle, like, the Mariners are going to be thrilled. They're going to act like they won the World Series. They're probably going to plan the parade down Pike Place, right? They're going to be planning the parade right by the, the public market down there. They're going to have their Starbucks. They're going to be throwing it up and down like they won the World Series. But as far as, like, the 162, the entire regular season, the fact that you took two against the Yankees, really, if you just take one of the three in Seattle, it's fine.
Right, but this was a kick in the coffee beans to Mariners fans because they were hoping, hey, the Astros take a few on the chin to the Yankees, and they got to come to our place. They're going to be wounded. They're going to be reeling. Our fans are going to be rocking. We're going to take it to them. Instead, they're sitting there going, as hot as we've been, with all that we've been doing, they still got a 10-game lead in the division. And I was watching the Dodgers-Giants game last night before I went to bed, and a graphic popped up on the screen. And the only technicality I can say is that because this game actually was played a day before the official start of the second half,
yeah,
that it should count as first half games. Because the graphic that I'm speaking of, never has a division leading team at the All-Star break that has a lead of 10 games or more ever not won the division. So that should speak very highly for the Astros, and that should mean that another reason why Seattle fans shouldn't be all that giddy no matter what you've done to get back to respectability.
Even without that graphic, you feel good about the division.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Sweeping the Yankees in the doubleheader makes you feel better than 713-780-ESPN. I'll almost give up my own phone number. 713-780-3776. 6445 says, I got caught cheating on my wife. I feel terrible, but that Yankee sweep made me sleep a lot better at night. I guess that's one way to
look
at it.
That wasn't your boy that texted yesterday about his ex.
It could have been Caleb.
Was that Caleb?
I don't think it was Caleb. Caleb usually puts his name on it. This guy did not put his name on it, and you can understand why.
Yes.
0977, that's inappropriate. Don't send me inappropriate things. 713-780-ESPN. 8029, sweeping the Yankees feels better than having a shot of Gentle Ben. 8755, sweeping the Yankees is more satisfying than your first shot of a Gentle Ben vodka. Let's not go too far, guys. Like, sweeping the Yankees is nice. I'm not going to quite go to those extremes.
Protect you guys. I love Ricky. Look, I think that we can go on and on and on about just how good it feels, because I don't know that any realistic Astros fan, when the gauntlet started to where we are now, could have thought that you could have gone undefeated against the Mets. You should have gone undefeated against the Yankees. You only lost two games. You won both series. And if you were one of those honks that say publicly you don't hold any grudges against the Astros, Jeff Passan, but you still do it and put asterisk,
yeah.
Jeff Passan, you now look at the Astros a little differently, as much as you don't want to, and you go, you know what? Just like Jeremy Branham said a few months ago, even if this team doesn't make a move, and I hate saying that because you know how badly I want them to make multiple moves.
I still want it too.
But even if they don't, you have to put them in the same breath as those two teams in New York and realize that they should be the favorite against either one of them. And I get it. The Mets could get both DeGrom and Scherzer back. So be it. They still got to face that lineup. The Astros are still going to get Michael Brantley back and could get Lance McCullers. So everybody can get their little help wherever it comes from. But the fact is, the results speak for themselves in the regular season, and the message has been sent clearly locally, nationally, and anywhere else.
You agree with that? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. I got a question on the other side, too. Do you want the Yankees in the postseason, or would you rather have a path of least resistance? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN. 97.5. All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Do you want the Yankees in the postseason? Or would you rather have the path of least resistance? Alden Gonzalez, by the way, covers Major League Baseball for ESPN. No asterisk at the end of his name. He'll be joining us at 12:45. He put out a piece about the Astros and their starting rotation and basically the cheap labor that they found in the international market. Also, the Who Said It Championship of the World coming up at 2 o'clock. And for the very first time, we're going to break ground on Who Said It. For the first time in the history of the greatest game show known to man, we will be playing Who Said It against a listener. So at 2 o'clock, you want to go up against the Killer Bees? You might have your chance.
We're men of the people.
At 2. We are.
Right?
We're open challenge. The That's
Hive,
a great
always
champions
alive.
Do.
We love their participation. This is another way to come on in.
We are, we like a great champion is willing to defend its champion against all comers, right?
We're the people's champion.
They want a working champion. They want a fighting champion. Ooh. And the Killer Bees are fighting champions. But do you want the Yankees in the postseason, or would you rather have a path of least resistance? Yankees get ousted in a division series. You don't meet up with them in the ALCS.
I mean, look, you always hear the saying, to be the best, you got to beat the best.
Ooh.
Well, but you have beat the best every if they've considered themselves to be time and time again. I had a friend of mine that's lives in New York still, that's a diehard Yankee fan, that unsolicited just hit me up and said, you guys are our thorn in the side. I'm like, really? I didn't want to say this, but they think people down here say it a different way. And she's like, well, what do you mean? I was like, well, basically, we're your daddy. And she's like, oh, it's that serious? I go, don't tell me for a second you don't look at Twitter and see how Yankee fans normally are when their braggadocious, boasterous self thinks that they are the undisputed, you know, best team in baseball. And now suddenly that they can't even stop looking in their rearview mirror, because now not only are objects closer than they appear, they're bumping your bumper and about to kiss your ass goodbye if you're not careful. So you better start paying real close attention to the team you haven't been able to beat every time you faced them in the playoffs previously in the last recent amount of history that we care about. You may see them again, and no matter how much you try to load up between now and the trade deadline, you still realize we got your number and you can play lottery tickets with it and have a better chance at winning.
Yeah, most people on the Twitch are saying, yeah, give us the Yankees and the ALCS.
I'm fine with it.
I'm not a path of least resistance guy. Give me the Yankees. Bring on the Yankees.
Their starting pitching really doesn't scare me all that much, with the exception of I know what Cole can do,
yeah,
and I respect the hell out of him, but you can put Verlander up against him, but the rest of the rotation, I would think, favors the Houston Astros.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Astros rotation is really good. Now, I think the Yankees are going to add an arm. I think that they'll add an arm before the August trade deadline. Yeah, I think so. I think they'll probably...
Boy, with Gallo struggling the way he is and them experimenting with everybody in the outfield.
They don't have to play Gallo. They have enough bodies where they can play somebody else.
But that's just it,
their
bodies, right?
Look,
it's a lot what the Astros do.
I think they'll trade for both. I mean, I think they'll probably get like a Benintendi type. But I also think they're going to be heavy in the market for Luis Castillo, because I think that they see what you see, where their pitching rotation's solid, right? Like, it's good. But do they have like an elite number two starter behind Gerrit Cole? I would say they don't. Nestor the Molester's had a really fine season, was an all-star, but do you believe Nestor the Molester is going to be like a number two type playoff, you know, anchor for you? I don't think so. ABC Eric says, I would love to knock off the Yankees on the way to a championship, but I'm being honest, the path of least resistance is ideal. Who wouldn't mind a cakewalk to another ship? I understand. Like, I get that. It's why the two seed, I don't know if the two seed's actually a worse spot than the one seed, if you look to see the wild cards and who's winning the AL Central. But I want to see the Astros, Yankees, and the ALCS. Part of it's because I'm confident the Astros could win that series, mm-hmm, or would win that series. But plus, just like the entertainment factor, like you have potential up to 7 games. Whoever has the home foot advantage has the home foot advantage. But you have a hostile road crowd, Yankee Stadium in the Bronx. We saw what Minute Maid was like yesterday.
It means something.
Ramp it up in the playoffs.
See me, Brendan? Home field means something. regardless who has home field, sure, everybody would love to see it. And especially for just the pure baseball fan that's not a fan of either team, that's the ideal matchup. It's like everybody in the Western Conference wanted to see Suns Warriors this year because they want to see the best matchup. But I'm not going to be mad at the fact that when you think about everything we spoke about already, but think about a negative of being in the massive media market, the number one media market in the world in New York, and having the record they've had all year long, and having the salary levels that they have all across the roster, the extra pressure that's put on them that I don't think is put on the Astros. I think just the same way that everybody kind of said the Astros might be the third or fourth best team in baseball at the start of the year, they're the same people that say, wow, if they're able to do this again, basically like saying they don't expect them to do it, but if they're somehow able to do it yet again, that they would actually finally be impressed. It just puts more pressure on New York, no matter if they're the one seed or the two seed, in the fact that they still have to live up to it. They still got to earn something that the Astros have previously earned and earned 5 straight times that the Yankees are still trying to get back to.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be a disappointment if either team missed the ALCS.
Completely.
Justin on Twitter, if we have to play the Yankees in the playoffs, I, of course, like our chances regardless of the moves they make. But if Yankees get ousted early, just gives us more fuel to clown on them, which, I mean, that's true. Ocho on Twitch saying, Astros lost to the path of least resistance twice in the Nationals and the Braves in the World Series. Braves were a good club.
We also lost Lance McCullers.
They were a good club. The National Series is frustrating. Now, because I mean, that team was good.
Both series are frustrating. The Astros were favored in the World Series.
Yep.
And if you have McCullers, I think it's a different series. Though the Braves were clearly the hottest team last year. Yeah, last year. The National Series is frustrating for other reasons. Because you know that whether you wanted Greinke to go longer or you wanted Cole to come in when he could have come in, and Will Harris, and Will Harris, look, as much as you can bash on him for giving up the home run, it was a freaking luck shot off the foul pole.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't in the cards for them. I think last year's a different story if they have the McCullers that was rolling through the playoffs previous to the injury.
See, I'm more frustrated with 19 because I think the 19 team was just loaded. Like, it was filthy. And, even if you eliminate the Game 7, yeah, you should have won that Game 7. But if you just win one of your four home games,
yep.
That's it. Like, the 19 World Series, way more frustrating, in my opinion, than the 2021 World Series. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, 0441. My concern with path of least resistance is the Astros often play to the level of their opponents the last few years. I take the challenge so every player steps up every game. I hear you, 0441. But if you're playing down to the level of competition in the playoffs, you got a bit of an issue. And the Astros haven't shown that. They usually take care of business in the playoffs. Regular season, that is something that you see the Astros do because of the dog days and the grind of 162.
I get it. Certain teams have to be motivated. We talked about from The Last Dance how Michael had to be outside, get motivation from outside or self-created motivation sometimes to play. The one thing the Astros don't have a problem with is when the lights get bright and the stage gets big, they need to step up and perform. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget how badly they were in the regular season of the bubble year. But when the playoffs started and they flipped that switch, and it didn't matter if there were fans or not and where they were playing and whether there was home field or not, they took care of their business, and they started kicking people's asses again. And that's as long as you have the nucleus of that team still around and you have the majority of those guys, minus the mound visits, that are still going to be there for you, you do realize that this team is going to be feared by any team. They might not admit it publicly because they can't, but when they're looking across that diamond, when they're looking in that other dugout and they know the guys that have been there, done that, and not just won a title, but what they've been through, the scrutiny, the constant jeering, all the different things that they have had to persevere and get through, and yet they still are like that cockroach you can't kill. They just keep coming back and coming back and coming back. And you know what? You can't get rid of them. That's intimidating as hell to any team playing the Astros.
Yeah, it is. 713-780-3776. Trey wants us to talk about the elephant in the room, the Jeremy Pena ball. I hesitate to call it the Jeremy Pena ball, but we know the situation. Astros yesterday, top of the ninth inning. They're up a run. Game one against the Yankees. Runner at second, two down. Weak ground ball on the left side. Perfectly in the hole. Bregman trying to get to it. Then it looks like he kind of took the glove back. It's almost like he didn't want to interfere with it.
Yep.
And then Pena, he kind of alligator armed it as well. Was not technically an error. But a lot of people saw that play and are like, Jeremy Pena is never going to be Carlos Correa. Defensively leads the world in errors.
No, he's not.
Fielding percentage is terrible.
He's not. We have already accepted that fact. It sounds like you guys are the ones that can't get over that fact. No one, and you and I got into it with on Twitter, and I had the pleasure of watching that play unfold instead of us texting, all of us watching it together yesterday. And we all said the same thing. Look, one guy or the other, someone's got to knock it down and keep it in the infield so the run doesn't score and you live to see another pitch and another hitter. And that has to be a lesson learned from that. But was that an easy play for either guy? Absolutely not. Should it have been knocked down? Sure, absolutely. But you can't sit there and continually nitpick this kid for all that he has already done for you, for the things he's shown you on a daily basis, and I don't care who you are and how smart you think you are, no one saw this coming. Not this quick, not this fast, not the way he's done it all season long, and also overcoming injuries in the process. So what he's been able to do, has he been Carlos Correa defensively? I got news for you, people. No one is, and he's never going to be that guy. And we have already accepted that. You need to accept that too. But accept the fact that this guy, especially at his price tag and his age, is doing things that you could not have expected for a championship caliber team and continues to do them. So yes, was that a mistake on his part? Sure. But you can blame Bregman too, who should have at least, instead of alligator arm, used and sacrificed his body to at least knock it down and keep it on the infield. But you live to see another pitch regardless. You won the game, so it's easier to accept. But it's even better if one, if not both guys learn from it, so that when the game is bigger and means more, they don't do it again.
Yeah, the old saying, right, big infield, right? Get big. Get big on the infield. This is a spot where the ball can't go through. I thought Bregman could have tried to knock it down, but it looked like he was trying to get out of the way for Pena to get to it. And then I also feel like Pena got on his heels on that play thinking Bregman was going to get to it. It was an awkward play. I don't think you should overreact to one play in a big spot. And, like, I realize that Pena's making some errors. The arm is a little bit like, okay, let's fix that up. Let's clean that up as well. But Jeremy Pena, if you want to believe Fangraph's stuff, he saves 8 runs more than the average shortstop to date in the 2022 season. He's also 4th in the American League in defensive war. Like, and he's missed time. And defensive war is a cumulative collecting counting stat. Jeremy Pena is a good defensive shortstop. Is he Carlos Correa with his platinum gold glove? No. But he's a good defensive shortstop.
That's the thing. Nobody is. Now, to be proper and to also give respect to our Hive that we love, Todd and Dre are both saying it was actually another play that you and I watched together.
Yep. And we're on different sides of this.
Which was the force out at second base, which we looked at several times while we were here. Mm-hmm. And I questioned, he had time to get him at second base. I really think so. But I think to your point was he never even looked at it.
No,
I think
he didn't.
His intent the entire time was to get the easier out at first base. I get what they're saying, that could have prevented the run from scoring too. But it's easy revisionist history to look back and say that.
Yeah.
I don't know what was going through his head, but I definitely think had he gone to second base, they could have gotten him.
I think he could have gotten him too. Like, I don't disagree with that. The reason that I was okay with it is Pena had some hesitation. The worst thing you can do in that spot is go to second base, not get the out there, and then all of a sudden the go-ahead runs on at first base. So go ahead, get the out. And then, yeah, if he gets a hit, it stinks, but at least it's only tied and you have the last at bat. So could he have got him at second? Yeah. Was it the conservative play not to go there? Yeah, guaranteed himself the out. And look, he's a rookie, right? Like, he's not going to make every play perfectly, but he is a good defensive shortstop. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Alden Gonzalez covers Major League Baseball for ESPN, one of their reporters. He wrote about the Astros pitching rotation and how they found success cheap internationally with Luis Garcia, Christian Javier, Jose Urquidy, Framber Valdez. We'll pick his brain when we return. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN
97.5.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We're going to be joined by Alden Gonzalez at 1:30, 1:15, somewhere around there. 1:30 is when Alden Gonzalez will be joining us. Rex Ryan on our Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, about that Pena play. If Pena tried to go to second and failed, every single person here would eviscerate him for not throwing to first for the safer play. He's absolutely right. If he tries to go to second and then the throw was errant, or, you know, there's a bobble and he's safe at second base, Pena would be getting destroyed. He's really getting destroyed either way, but more so because of the play in the hole. But I agree. Like, it's the nitpicky thing of baseball. Could have made the play, should have made the play, but then also the idea of, like, okay, well, what if he doesn't make that play? What's the conversation like then? I was okay Pena making sure of one in that spot.
Yeah, look, I mean, everything can be scrutinized every single time it comes up. I don't think if he's making the right play to get the lead runner, unless it's a totally bang-bang, split-second decision. When you looked at it, and he didn't have the opportunity to do what we did, but when you looked at it again, could he have gotten him? I think so. But if there's ever a doubt in your mind, you take the safe out. He took the safe out. At the end of the day, if he takes the safe out and gets the out, no one should be that critical of him.
I think it could go either way. I think it's 50-50. I don't think there's a right answer. I think if you go to second, you're aggressive there, and you get the out, really good play. The tying run's still at first base. The worst thing you can do in that spot, though, is to not get an out at all. So it could go either way. Like, I totally understand
and
that.
And again, because the run scored, that's why these two plays are going to be scrutinized more than most. If that's just a non-blemish inning and the Astros end up winning the game after that point, then no one says a word about either play. But it's still, you want them to learn from the plays so that they don't do it again and they understand the situational baseball.
See, Dre's saying it was an easy flip to Altuve, which is something that I disagree with.
I don't think
so. And then, one, he also double-clutched. Like, he didn't double-clutch going to second.
Yep.
Like, he never looked at second. He double-clutched, though, going to first.
Transition.
Absolutely. So, like, that was part of it as well. Plus, he had already, like, crossed over what was parallel with second base. So now he's fielding it ahead of, like, second base, really, and, like, trying to go backwards to flip it back to Altuve. I don't think that was an easy flip.
I don't think it was a flip. I think if he flips it, now you're talking about a play where the runner easily could have been safe, because I don't think no matter how hard you flip it, you can put enough on it. Because he had a full head of steam coming in, it was going to be, either way, it was going to have to be a quick transition and kind of a sidearm, you know, rocket fire at close range to get it to second base in time. So I think that played a big part of it. When momentum and everything is taking you already on the grass and towards the pitcher's mound, that's a tough play to make. And also peripherally in your vision to see the runner and make that anticipated, do I have time to get him or not, decision really quick.
Mm-hmm.
He took the safe play.
Yeah.
It's not that bad of a big of a deal. The bigger deal to me is knocking the ball down to save the run.
That was a bigger play there. And I think that both Bregman and Pena would be like, yeah, should have knocked that one down. Should have been a big infield there. I want to build a statue, though, Brandon Bielak. I understand that he gave up the 3-run home run to Aaron Judge yesterday, which made it a 2-run game there in the 9th inning. It gave you a sweat whenever you had a 5-run lead entering the inning. But remember yesterday, my biggest fear of going with Javier Garcia in this doubleheader was the fact that neither one of those guys goes deep into games. Like, I would have rather used Urquidy instead of either Javier or Garcia yesterday, and then the one you're not using pitches today in Seattle. And the thought there was, because I want to use up a bulk of the 18 innings that I know I'm guaranteed to play a minimum of. And it came to fruition, if we actually tell the truth here, because Javier in game one, he went 5 innings. You had to use all 4 of your high-leverage pitchers in that game with Presley gone, so Maton fill in to make up that 4. And then the second part of the game, the second game of the doubleheader, Luis Garcia went 5 innings. So, like, my fear came to fruition to where now all of a sudden I have to eat 4 innings of a game one of a doubleheader, 4 innings of game two of a doubleheader, and the only thing that, like, I didn't see coming, which, like, my fear, again, came to fruition, was that Brandon Bielak saved them. Brandon Bielak ate up 3 critical innings in that second game of the doubleheader and alleviated all of my fears in hindsight.
He did a hell of a job. I think Dusty sometimes decides, it's like riding a hot hand in blackjack. It's like, how long are you going to keep going? When are you going to pull the plug before it's too late? And I think Dusty went to the well one too many times. It wasn't for lack of performance, right, and what he was doing and how he was doing it. And his fastball is not overpowering or above average by any means, but he was blowing it by people. He was effective. You know, his off-speed pitches were dying right before they crossed the plate, getting out of the zone so that the big bats couldn't elevate them. He was doing everything right, but I think that the one thing that I kept looking at as he kept barreling through the Yankees lineup was just pitch count. I kept looking at the pitch count going, this is a guy that isn't stretched out enough to get into the 80s.
Well, they've stretched him out in Sugarland. He'd been starting games in Sugarland.
They've tried, but even still, going back, if you look at it, I don't think that he's been really pushing the threshold of 100 pitches or 90 pitches to where I would feel comfortable in a major league game. Because the other thing, and you know this as well as anyone, Jeremy, there's pitching in regular innings, and there's the extra taxing stress of high leverage pitches in innings. And he started to feel some different leverage, right? And that inning alone started to... those pitches meant more. They were like 1.5 to 2 instead of just a pitch on the pitch count, because it was starting to get testy. And then once he gave up the home run to Judge, you just knew he probably shouldn't have been out there in the 9th. He was gassed. He gave you every single thing he could. So definitely no disrespect to him. But in retrospect, just the way we did with those plays we were just talking about, we've said this before about Dusty. If you're going to do something like that, and that's the way you want to go about it, have someone already up, but not just up, but ready to go in a moment's notice, so that if he just puts one guy on or two, just before you have to face Judge 75, 80 pitches in, and you don't have, you're running on fumes, have someone that's fresh at least to take their best shot at Aaron Judge.
I agree with that literally every single time except for yesterday. And the reason that it's not
yet. Did you have the big lead?
No. Well, that's part of it. That's part of the equation, that it was a 5-run lead. And even if he hits the home run, it's still a 2-run game. The second part of it is that you went to Montero and he's literally pitching for the second time in the same day. So, like, I understand that Dusty Baker didn't want to get him up. He didn't want to get him hot after having used him the day before. So Dusty was willing to literally push it as far as humanly possible because of the lead and because he didn't want to use a pitcher for the second time in a day, which I get. Like, I'll be honest with you. I would have not used Rafael Montero yesterday in that second game.
I wouldn't
have used any of the relievers that I used in game one yesterday. So it was him trying to ride out Brandon Belak. He's also not going to be on the roster tonight, tomorrow. He's on the taxi squad because you get an extra player.
Oh, there's
off
no
a
doubt
he
did a massive favor, but here's where I would combat that.
You could go with one of the other pitchers.
Yeah, and Abreu was the guy that in his last stint against the Yankees had success against Stanton because he's got that plus-plus fastball. Even when nothing else is working, and you're playing, think about that. You're thinking about, you're playing the last inning of a full doubleheader coming out of the All-Star break where Judge was part of the All-Star festivities and played in the game. He couldn't have been at his very best. If you get not that he has ever overmatched at the plate, but he didn't have a lot of success yesterday anyway. And if you bring Abreu, you throw in 100, 101. Yeah. I think it gives you a better chance than trying to hope that the fumes hold up from Brandon Belak.
Well, the lead helps that because it gives you a cushion.
Absolutely, and the cushion is big.
I also think he was managing for the weekend. Like the idea of, okay, I don't have to use Abreu because we know we're sending Belak down after the game. I don't have to use Seth Martinez. Now I have a couple of fresh arms when the rest of the bullpen has been used today. So Dusty was looking a little bit at the forest as opposed to the trees. He got burned by trying to get an extra inning out of Brandon Belak, but I don't necessarily disagree with it. The thing, though, is that, like, you're right. We shouldn't, even though Brandon Belak gave up that home run to Aaron Judge in the ninth inning, made it a two-run game, we should all, in this city, and if you're a Houston Astro fan, be incredibly thankful that Brandon Belak saved the bullpen for what could have been a travesty. My biggest fear was that you're throwing two starters to the Yankees in a day-night doubleheader in the first of 19 games in 18 days. That fear came to fruition because both guys only went five innings. You had to blow the bullpen in game one. And then here it is, the unsung hero, the Sugarland Space Cowboy himself, Brandon Belak, saving the day. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Greg, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. Go ahead, Greg.
Hey, guys. I don't usually call in, but I was so shocked that y'all took up for Dusty early on a couple of his decisions, especially you, Jeremy. But I was just wondering, I don't have a dog in the race either way. Why do you have so much disdain for the manager, man? I mean, it appears to be. I know both of you. He's not the perfect manager, but he's done what he was hired to do to get the team through the troubled times of the cheating scandal. And I can't remember in the playoffs. You have to refresh my memory. Has he done anything in the playoffs that has cost the team a game like the previous manager did, costing us the World Series with the decision with Cole? And Greinke, like A.J. Hinch, everyone praises A.J., but he actually cost us a World Series, or possibly cost us a World Series. And if you could explain that, I don't really bet. He's not going to be here very much longer.
Right. Appreciate the call, Greg. And it's a fair point about A.J. Hinch. A.J. Hinch made a costly move in Game 7 of the 2019 World Series that if he handled it differently, maybe the Astros have a second World Series. I remember Dusty managing pretty well in the playoffs last year. I don't have any specific beefs against Dusty. Most of it is the fact that we watch the game day in, day out, and there's a lot of decisions that Dusty make that are basically mind-blowing. Yep. Having like Mauricio Dubon in the leadoff spot is something that a modern-day manager would not do. Now, the old school idea of, like, well, get a guy comfortable in their lineup. Get a guy everyday work. Make sure that you're using all of your utility guys. He's not safe. He's not analytical where he's going to, like, really change the lineup a ton, which is fine. And, like, I think Dusty does a good job managing the personalities in the clubhouse. I think he does a good job in the clubhouse. I think he does a good job of getting Alex Bregman to play well when he's struggling. Yuli Gurriel to give him the runway to bounce back. There's a lot of things that Dusty Baker does well. My specific beef with Dusty is the way he handles the nine innings of a game. And I think that you can look at it and take a look at his entire career and see that those things have stacked up. Ruined the arm of Pryor. Ruined the arm of Kerry Wood. Hasn't won the World Series. So there's good that Dusty does. There's also the nine innings of work that Dusty does as a manager that are very curious at times.
We both have baseball in our backgrounds. We both follow it consistently on a daily basis. And it's like, again, I'll use the gambling analogy, but you play blackjack. And you know that what the book says. And sometimes people just go out on a whim and go completely against the book. Now, it may work out for you, but that doesn't mean it was the right call. And I think similarly in baseball, you know what the right plays are or what the right moves should be. And he plays a lot of gut feelings that go completely against baseball logic. Sometimes they work out. Sometimes they don't. Jeremy mentioned how sometimes it can be career-altering with the way he has always been scrutinized about the way he mismanages pitching staffs. But at the same time, look, The same reason why we're talking about Pena hoping he gets it out of his system and learns before he gets to the playoffs is the same reason you hope that if Dusty does have a slip up here and there, or he already knows a lot of times, I know what y'all are going to ask me about. Why did I do this or why did I do that? But at the end of the day, if it stays in his mind so that maybe he thinks about it a little bit further and harder in playoffs, so be it. I'm not here to hope that he gets fired. I'm just here to scratch my temple and point out what a lot of people are thinking a lot of times, just like you are, when he doesn't follow the book or anything close to it.
713-780-ESPN. The Houston Texans will start training camp. First practice July 29th. We are counting down to the day with our top 10 Texan storylines entering the 2022 season. Number 6 is next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about my good people at Fitz Roofing. And the reason why I tell you about Fitz Roofing is I believe in them because I know how they do business. And for Houstonians, that's the exact same reason you should love them too, because they're dedicated to you guys. They take care of you every step of the way. They have the best ratings in the business, the best warranties in the business. They use the best products in the business, and they believe in their ability to do what you need them to do so much. They do free, no obligation inspections that cost you nothing. All you got to do is pick up the phone and call 832-521-3001. They come to you. They tell you how they can help. They go on with the rest of their day. You want them to actually do the job, you book them, they come back, and before, during, and after the process is over with, you will be pleased, you will be satisfied. Their customer service is second to none. All you got to do is go to their website, go to fitzroofing.com, and find out all the different ways they can help you, because they can fix leaky roofs, they can put a new roof on your house, your business, your commercial project. But on top of that, they can put a fence in your yard like they did for me a couple months ago. They can do home repairs. And the best thing is they all start with that free, no obligation inspection. Other companies are going to charge you $75 to $100 just to come out and look at the problem and then try to rope you into signing on the dotted line to use them by saying, oh, we'll take that off as long as you do service with us, and then they charge whatever they want. That's not how they do business at Fitz. They believe in what they do so much that they'll do the free, no obligation inspection, because they believe once they tell you what they can do, how they can help, and the price that they'll charge you, that you'll sign up with them in a heartbeat because they're the experts in their field. Check them out today. Again, free, no obligation inspection, 832-521-3001. Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
ESPN 97.5.